Andy, good to see this hockey stick again. Today I will talk about the essential topological phases of matter, mainly in 2 plus 1 dimensions. But I will try make use of anomalies to diagnose topological phases and to define topological phases. And especially, I will focus on anomaly in gravitational physics, okay? So topological phases, just very quickly, it is a phases of condensed matter, which is a very quantum phases of matter. So it is a phase which does not have a good classical analog. So it's a very quantum or very entangled state of matter, okay? Okay, so on the other hand, in my talk title, it says anomalies, right? So anomalies, it's a, by definition, it's a breakdown of a classical symmetry by quantum effect. Okay, so it is the, well, in my opinion, it's a most pronounced quantum effect. So nothing more quantum than this, okay? Since both are very, very quantum entities, it is actually, they interact quite a bit, and in my opinion, these two are almost synonyms, okay? Just to briefly set up what I'm talking about, I want to start from something very simple. It's just a quantum Hall effect. It's a classic example of topological phase, and classic and the first example of topological phase. So as you know, we put a magnetic field perpendicular to the two-dimensional electron gas. And then we see a lot of plateaus in response in sigma xy, the Hall conductance, as a function of magnetic field or Hilling fraction. These plateaus, which is quite unexpected from the classical point of view, because in classical mechanics, we never have such quantized response. Right? So now, what has to do with anomaly in quantum Hall effect? So in quantum Hall effect, it is also well known that because of the quantum Hall physics, essentially, if you have a bulk quantum Hall effect located here, if you make a boundary to the system, you will see a gapless edge mode. So in terms of energy diagram, you have an energy, and this is a momentum along the edge, which I'm assuming is well conserved. In a quantum Hall effect, because of the lambda quantization, there's a big energy gap, h by omega, where omega is a cyclotron frequency. So it's a well separated states, levels by an energy gap. On the other hand, the states appearing at the boundary is gapless, and it connects in this single particle picture, a conduction band and a valence band. Okay, so and it's fully directional, it's chiral because of the magnetic field. And this has a lot to do with the fact that sigma xy is quantized. Okay. So why this chiral the presence of chiral H mode is related to the sigma x quantized sigma xy I just described. Okay, so now if you look at the current localizing this boundary, okay? So it's a good idea to look at the edge theory at low energy, because at low energy, only excitations you can see is pretty much localized here, okay? But if you look at the charge in the edge theory, it turns out what you discover is that charge is not strictly conserved, precisely because of the quantum anomaly, okay? So this is a known fact for the chiral fermion. In 1 plus 1 dimensions, charge is actually not conserved, okay? Okay, so one possible attitude, if we feel serious, okay, then, okay, this theory is sick, so let's abandon it, okay? But from the condensed matter point of view, it is precisely the whole response, okay? So the fact that charge is not conserved on the boundary is meaning that charge is actually leaking into the bulk, okay? So that is the origin of the quantum Hall conductance in the presence of boundary. Okay. So this is a simple example of the yes.
One What is the charge not preserved? Is it in the ground
state? It's in the ground state,
so
yes.
The expectation value means?
This is expectation value is taken with respect to the ground state.
And what do you mean by it's not preserved? Does it mean that you are losing charge?
So in terms of ground states, if you speak about the ground state, it means if you look at the fermion bilinear expectation value, you will get non-zero expectation value for which you don't expect to have expectation value because of the charge conservation.
Right, but you describe this as the possibility of having charges going into the
ball. What I said at the level of correlation function is of course true, but I think also you can make a web packet here and you can literally see that charge is leaking into the bulk. So, I mean, it has to do with excited state as well. Yes, yes. Okay, so this simple setting, of course we are all familiar with, but essentially we want to extend these ideas to wider range of topological phases, okay. But question is, why do I want to view quantum Hall physics in the language of anomaly? Because, okay, it may be possible, but why it is so useful, okay. So one particular point of view is that response viewed as an anomaly maybe, or quite often, stable against interactions, okay. So integer quantum Hall effect, everything I described so far, you can understand in the language of non-interacting physics, of course, but it turns out integer quantum Hall effect is a stable phase of matter against interactions, okay? So this formulation or point of view in terms of anomaly tells us something about the stability of the phase against interactions. If you are familiar with single particle bound structure, you know how to define, for example, sigma x y in terms of non-interacting block wave functions. That's entirely possible, and that's very useful point of view. However, once we start adding interactions, formulations of sigma x y in terms of block wave function may not be useful. However, stated this way, there's a chance that physics we are describing will survive actually interactions. Okay, so in the later part of my talk, I want to contrast these two pictures more. So I will present some particular model where interaction changes a topological classification of the ground state. So which is only foreseen if we formulate the system in terms of anomalous transport or just anomaly, okay. A bigger picture or bigger question is that knowing that quantum Hall effect is explained or classified in terms of anomaly, can we extend it to all kinds of topological phases, given that we are having a zoo of topological phases protected by symmetries or any other kind of topological phases. So I'm kind of hoping that I can extend this idea, which goes back to Laffrin, we can extend to all kinds of topological phases. So I will make some attempts to extend this idea to all other kinds of topological phases. Okay. So this is the introduction and the today I will talk about topological phases where charge is not conserved. Okay. So when charge is conserved, everything I said about up now may still apply, okay? Like a fractional quantum Hall effect, which is interacting, but charge is conserved, so everything I said is continued to be true. However, there's many topological phases where charge or particle number is not the conserved quantity. So I will speak about the response or anomaly of the system in terms of its gravitational response, okay, which may be well defined even in the case where charge is not conserved. So I'm a little bit ambitious today, so I will speak about two stories. One which is related to the infinitesimal gravitational anomaly, and the other related to large or global gravitational anomaly. Okay. So for the first part of the story, I will focus on the two-dimensional topological phases which break time reversal symmetry. For example, a chiral P wave superconductor. Okay. So it's a superconducting system. So there's in terms of a Bogoliubov-Bjorn picture, there's no charge conservation. Okay. So in that case, for example, the anomalous behavior I described in terms of charge current at the boundary of quantum Hall effect does not directly apply. Okay. So however, somehow we all know that chiral P wave superconductor or two-dimensional topological superconductor in general is topological state of matter, right? For example, you can define a topological invariant Chan number for a single particle wave function for the fermionic quasi particle in Bogoliubov-Bjorn Hamiltonian. That's entirely possible for two-dimensional topological superconductors. However, as I said earlier, such a formulation might not survive once we start including interactions. Okay, so I want to formulate everything now in the language which may have a wider range of applicability. Okay, so idea is again, it's essentially the same, except I replace charge by a energy or momentum. Okay, so so this energy and momentum, they may be, or perhaps always, they are conserved, even in the case where charge is not conserved. So this is the principle that nothing can escape from gravity, right? So gravity can couple energy and momentum, which seems almost always possible. Okay. So then it is a good idea to look for the response of the system for the external gravitational perturbations, which allows you to compute, for example, a thermal current. Okay. So thermal response is always very defined. Okay. So the story goes similarly as in the charge case. This part of the story is nothing new, but let me explain how we extend the charge, the idea which I describe in terms of charge response generalizes to gravitational response. So again, the situation is similar. You have a two-dimensional bulk here, and you have a topological phase, let's say. Okay. In terms of single particle picture, as before, we have a chiral edge state, which may not be charge conserving. For example, it may be a Majorana chiral Majorana fermion. Okay. But anyway, we have a one-dimensional boundary. And as before, we can focus on the excitations localized on the boundary. And we can ask the question similar to what I did for the charge case. So take an energy momentum tensor. Is it conserved? Okay. In 1 plus 1 dimensional chiral Majorana fermions, we have in fact the anomalous behavior for the conservation of energy momentum. So this may again sounds a little bit uncomfortable, but of course, if you have a bulk system which is attached to this boundary system, all this is saying is that if something flows here, it must leak into the bulk, which is entirely natural. Okay, and so in terms of thermal response, this is known as a thermal Hall response, which is usually denoted by kappa xy, and in this case, kappa xy divided by temperature is a universal number in the unit of this combination of the constant, Boltzmann constant and H. And this part, which is the chiral central charge of the topological phase, is a universal number, which is universal beyond a single particle picture. Yes?
So what's the definition of thermal responses? What property changes with temperature?
Yes, so you make a temperature gradient, just like you make a electric field gradient to drive voltage, and then you measure thermal current across
thermal current.
Yes.
So
Yeah, yes, so it's a thermal current, which is different from a charge current. Of course, if it is non-interacting, Biedermann and Franz's law equate these two.
Well, thermal current is checking how the energy flows.
Energy flows, yes. Okay. Yes.
Can
yes.
you make the relation between gravitational anomaly and this thermal effect more clearly?
I think I will perhaps derive this anyway, but in the later slide. But yeah, its idea is similar. If you try to make a wave packet, and you cannot, so make you make a wave packet, you let it move here, right? And then energy should be conserved if it is a strictly one-dimensional system, because energy cannot escape anywhere. But then you will discover that energy is actually leaking into the bulk, which tells you that there's a transport across the sample. Okay. Yeah, I mean, we can derive this more formally, I think. For example, using Kubo formula, right? Yes. So let me actually postpone it because I think I will derive this relation. Okay. Yes.
Quick question related to that. So what is the right hand side? What is the vector on the right hand side of this insufficient value?
This one?
Yeah.
So you have a full current E, PX, PY, PZ. Okay, it's 2+1. So you have E and PX. And the they should be conserved for fixed index nu, right? Because energy, momentum, they're supposed to be separately conserved. So this represents two conservation laws.
But so, I mean, it's non-zero, so what is the right-hand side if you evaluate this?
Ah, yes, so this is, I think, good question. So I think there's R, scalar curvature, but there's, I think, perhaps epsilon mu nu or something. No. That's right. Is that R which R? I think R which R is in higher dimensions. I think there's R appearing here, but I don't remember the tensorial structure. Right.
So the flat space time is managed.
Right, but yeah, exactly. Good point. So if we want to make a thermal perturbation, you can interpret as external gravitational gradient, which creates which make the system deviate from the flat space time. Okay.
But what's the precise relation? So gradient and temperature equals some gravitational.
Yes. Yeah, so.
Gradient of gravity.
I think gravitational potential must be something like this, but we have to put velocities to get the. I think c squared, well, in condensed matter, of course, it's not the speed of light. It's v squared, I think. I may be missing some dimensions incorrect, but temperature gradient produces the gravitational potential, which is just actually a thermodynamic relation.
So R is proportional to the gradient of phi, or?
Yeah, that's a good question. I would say so. This just changes. This is a first order change in metric, but to get the curvature, you have to, you know.
I see.
Yes.
Because in like when you have charge conservation one dimension, you would get something like that's what we do after you do, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's proportional to the electric field.
That's right.
Which is gradient of phi electric.
That's right.
So
yeah, I think we can make that analogy. Yes. Okay, so this is something known. I just try to describe how I describe my gravity coupling, and I will choose this representation because this representation can be used both for infinitesimal response and the large gauge, large coordinate transformations. Okay, so it's again very known thing, but let me go over very quickly. So I prepare quantum Hall system or a topological superconductor system. So I have a bulk. And in principle, I have edges, or just one edge. But here, in this cylindrical geometry, I have two edges. Okay. So I have edge one, which is described by some Hamiltonian with some velocity. R is the circumference. Okay. I have another edge system, edge two, which has a opposite chirality. Okay. Actually, having opposite chirality is not necessary right now, but I just put it everything for completeness. Okay. So edge theory has a partition function at particular temperature beta, and I have an additional parameter omega, which is a external angular momentum. And since I'm considering a ring as an edge theory, it conserves momentum, or in the ring geometry, it's angular momentum, which couples to a external rotation frequency omega z. Okay. And usually this, you can rewrite this as a coupling of this edge system, which is a conformal field theory. It couples to a geometry through this parameter tau, which is an imaginary quantity. And the imaginary part, I think, is related to beta. And the real part related to this omega. Okay. So we can compact notation of the temperature and omega z. I have a single complex parameter tau. Okay. So this is the edge theory coupling to the gravity, and in this notation, everything about the gravity is encoded in tau and tau bar. It's a complex number. Okay. So in usual situation, we can expand this partition functions in terms of this bilinear chi A, chi B. Chi A depends only on tau, so it's a contribution from one edge. And this part depends on tau bar, which is the contribution from the other edge, and they're connected, they're coupled this way. And you have an expansion, and A and B labels a particular sectors in the theory, like a ground state or ground state with excited state, and so on and so forth. You have expansion. But for the case of our interest, I will focus on one edge, okay? And for the one edge, we essentially just forget about this part, okay? And I will just focus on the partition function on one edge, this particular sector, or just say this is a partition function for the single edge, right? So these are preparations. And I want to tell you the first part of my story. Okay, so I want to develop a response theory of the topological superconductor, two-dimensional T-breaking topological superconductor, by making use of this geometrical coupling of the edge theory. Okay, so in particular, what I will try to derive is the following. So for the electromagnetic charge, there's something called a Streda formula for the Hall conductance, which relate the magnetization and the particle number and the chemical potential and the applied magnetic field. Okay. So sigma xy, you can write it in terms of Kubo formula, which is useful, let's say if it is single particle system, or you can rewrite it as a in terms of thermodynamic quantities like this. Okay. So this is in some sense alternative to Kubo formula. As a first part of the story, I will derive a thermal or gravitational analog of this formula, which is actually the answer is this. Okay. So it's a very simple formula. Okay. So I have a kappa H, or which I previously denoted kappa XY. That's the Hall conductance of the system, okay? So it is related to the angular momentum of the system, assuming I have a disk geometry now. So angular momentum is very conserved. And I have an entropy here, S, okay? And the T is the temperature, and omega Z is, the, again, the external angular frequency, which is the external source for the LZ. Okay. So the first question I want to ask was, is there a thermal analog of the straight of formula? And the answer is simply this. Okay. And V is a velocity. Okay. It's a velocity of the edge system. Okay. This is the thermodynamic relation we found from the consideration of the of this kind of edge theory coupled to gravity. Okay. So how do we derive this? Okay. So this is sort of interesting because it is relating the mechanical response, right? So you rotate your sample, but you get the thermal response, which is in some sense cross-correlated, because on the one hand you have entropy and temperature, on the other hand you have omega z and the angular momentum. Compared to the electromagnetic case, this formula is strictly quantized. Okay, so electric charge and c, they all, I mean, in the unit of electric charge and this is not the central charge, this is the speed of light. Sigma H is quantized. On the other hand, this thermal analog of straight of formula, which is very simple, but surprisingly, we are not aware of anybody deriving this before. It is not strictly conserved in the sense that it depends on the microscopic parameter, which is velocity. Okay. Okay, so how do I derive this? Well, it's almost like a two-line calculations. Okay, so I think it's very easy to see. Okay, so first I will derive a Hall conductance first. Okay, so Hall conductance in terms of H perspective, it's an energy, a current derivative with respect to temperature. And the energy current, if you have a particular velocity, it's a V times energy. Okay. But from the partition function, if you take a first derivative with respect to the real part of the tau, which you call modular parameter, it brings down one every knot here, okay, by taking a partial derivative. So then you multiply V to get energy. But since it is a kappa H, I take a further derivative with respect to temperature. That gives you kappa H, which was derived before by Capperi et al. But now to derive the Strehler formula I just presented, I just switch the ordering. Okay, so instead of taking derivative with respect to the real part of the modular parameter and then imaginary part, I just switch the order. So I first take a derivative with respect to the temperature first, which gives me entropy. Okay. And then I take a derivative with respect to eta, which is omega z. Okay. By comparing these two relations, we immediately notice that kappa h is related to the entropy derivative with respect to external momentum omega z. Okay. By thermodynamic relation, you can relate ds d omega z to dlz dt, because lz couples to omega z, s couples to t. Okay. So this is a thermal analog of Strehler formula. And the, yes?
Your eta is a chemical potential.
Yes, so it is angular velocity, but yes, it is angular velocity, but it couples to L naught this way, so we can make use of it. Eta is not actually chemical potential. It's omega z. I mean, charge is not conserved, so there's no chemical potential. Right. Right. Okay. I think this is simple enough. We derived something, as far as I know, this is a new thermodynamic relation. And the as an application, we can make use of it to derive thermal response of three-dimensional topological superconductor. That's why we actually got interested in this problem. But I will postpone this discussion until the end. So far no question. Okay, good. So How much time do I have?
Half an hour.
Half an hour. Good. So for the second part, I will now focus on something I will call large or global gravitational anomaly and its connection to something we call symmetry protected topological frames. Okay. And so the physics I described in the first part, these are about a topological phases which break time reversal symmetry. And the edge states are chiral edge theories. So it's a chiral conformal field theory. These are by now, in some sense, familiar. It's easier to characterize in the sense that it has a non-zero sigma xy or non-zero kappa xy. Okay, so we have a very, very defined, we have a very good way to define them in terms of parameters or physical quantities which are insensitive to interactions. However, I want to propose a new setting, which is a newer kinds of topological phases, which are in some sense more fragile, but nevertheless that exist, okay? So it's a topological phases, which are now protected by certain kind of symmetries, okay? For example, time reversal symmetry, okay? So in the instrator, topological states protected by charge conservation as well as time reversal symmetry is related to the two-dimensional quantum spin Hall effect, for example. For these kinds of topological phases protected by some symmetry, meaning these are non-topological phase if you do not insist on imposing symmetry. But if you start imposing symmetries, these states are distinct from a trivial kinds of states, for example, atomic limit. Okay, so these are symmetry protected topological phases. Okay, so but for these topological phases, the question is, can we identify some anomalies or maybe response to define them in fully interacting setting? Okay, so that is a key question. And since these states are more fragile, it's more difficult to see how anomalous they are, okay? But I will propose a particular way to define an anomalous response for these symmetry protected topological phases, okay? And so I will give you a particular simple example, okay? So I will impose as a symmetry condition, Z2 cross Z2 symmetry condition. So for example, you can think of charge and for example, spin, okay? So in insulator, if you're lucky, you have a conservation for both charge and let's say SD component of spin, they're simultaneously conserved, but I do not want to do that, so I will relax it. So instead of having such U1 cross U1 symmetry, I will have a situation where Z2 part of charge and the Z2 part of spin are conserved. For charge and spin, they are conserved mode 2, but they are not strictly conserved, okay? We can build such topological phase at the level of non-interacting system, okay? And for this type of topological phases, let me write down the edge theory, possible edge theory directory, okay? So this is my edge theory where I have NF copies of theories, okay? But just focusing on one theory, you have a one chiral Majorana fermions left moving, which is coupled to another chiral fermions, which is right moving, okay? So this is a different situation than I described here in topological superconductor, but it's more like a two copies of it, except I have one which is propagating in this direction, the other propagating in the opposite direction, okay? So this kind of state does not have the anomaly I described here, okay? So it cannot be characterized by non-zero kappa xy or it doesn't fall into this category. So we cannot categorize or characterize such topological phases. But before moving on to discussion, why I'm calling this is a topological phase, okay? So if you write down this edge theory, and I insist on having this Z2 cross D2 symmetry. Okay, so what is this Z2 cross D2 symmetry within the edge theory? So I'm imposing the following symmetry. So I have a fermion number for left part, and I have the other fermion number, which is for the defined for the left moving part. I'm imposing the parity of these symmetries are separately conserved, okay? So this have the following consequence. By imposing these symmetries, if you start enumerating potential perturbations to this edge theory, you quickly realize that any fermion bilinear which connect left and right is it's gone. They are prohibited if you insisting on having this symmetry. Okay, so at least at the quadratic level, this is a stable topological phases of matter. Okay, so this is the picture. So I have a bulk, and I have a NF topological charge in the bulk, or NF unit of Chan number in the bulk. I have NF copies of left and right moving Majorana fermion on the boundary. With Z2 cross Z2 symmetry, they stay stable for against perturbations. So at least at the quadratic level, this is qualified as a topological phase. Okay, you have a non-zero topological invariant in the bulk, and there's a stable edge state. However, as I said here, it's stable. We can see it at the quadratic level. But question is it possible to have a stable phase even in the presence of interactions? Okay, so that is a question. Well, that is not obvious because, for example, for the case of quantum Hall effect or topological superconductors, sigma xy or kappa xy are universal and quantized in some unit. So we know they are stable against interactions. But once we start thinking about such kind of a topological phases protected by symmetry, they are more fragile, which has vanishing sigma xy and the kappa xy, okay. So the question now is that this topological phase, which exists at the level of quadratic level, do they survive interactions? And the best way to diagnose the stability of such system is to look for the response, okay? So this is essentially the idea borrowed from Laplin, which defines a charge response for the quantum Hall effect. So his argument goes like this. So you have, again, a cylindrical geometry, and imagine you have a quantum Hall effect inside, okay? So he has the following thought experiment. So we thread the flux through the system, and because of the electromagnetic gauge invariance, the state with flux, state with no flux, or state with unit flux, or state with integer times unit flux, they're identical, okay? So your Hamiltonian are exactly the same. It's just a matter of gauge choice, okay? And so your Hamiltonian or partition function are equivalent. However, what he noticed was that if you do this process adiabatically, something actually happens to the system, although Hamiltonian and the partition function seems to be invariant under this adiabatic change. So what happened is that since you have an edge state here and the other edge state here, if you complete this adiabatic process, you pump a unit or any unit of charge, electric charge from left to right or right to left. That is the response, which is the most universal feature of the quantum Hall effect. I will call this as a large gauge transformation for the following reason. So this change in phi is a physical change. It's not a gauge transformation for small phi, small delta phi. However, if this delta phi is integer times the flux quantum, a phi situation with phi and the other situation with phi plus n phi are gauge equivalent, okay? But this gauge equivalence, this is in some sense a gauge transformation. However, you cannot achieve this gauge transformation by successively applying small gauge transformation, okay? You establish gauge equivalence only at discrete point, okay? So to summarize, Laplin's argument is essentially saying that quantum Hall system is a system which is non-invariant under large electromagnetic gauge transformation. Okay, so following the philosophy of the part one of my talk, I will generalize this to the case of not charge non-conserving system. Okay. It's not invariant in the sense that I pump a charge from here to here.
So by the system, then you mean the state of the system?
Right.
Changes.
State of the system changes. Hamiltonian is the same. Oh. Right. Okay. So again, this means charge is not strictly conserved if you focus on one day. That's why it's anomaly. Okay, so I will generalize this to the gravitational or geometrical setting. Because if there is no conserved charge, I cannot rely on electromagnetic gauge invariance. Okay, so now the space-time of the H theory is a torus because it's a two-dimensional system which is compactified in one direction, like this cylinder here, and I have a finite temperature, so it's a two-dimensional torus. Okay, so you have something like this. You have this I don't know how to call this, but let me call it a parallelogram, and you have two faces here and here, they are identified, okay? But you can change the shape of your torus by changing this parameter tau, which is not coincidental. It's not coincidental that I'm having tau here and in the tau in the previous slide, of course. So you can parameterize your shape of the torus by this one complex parameter tau. And so by changing tau, you get a different torus, okay? So you start from your CFT at the boundary, and you put your CFT on a particular torus. By changing tau, you are essentially changing the geometry. However, it is known that there's the invariance or coincidental invariance of this parameterization. So if new parameter tau prime is happen to be tau plus 1 or minus 1 over tau, it actually represents the same torus, as you can see from the relabeling of this integer appearing in the identification of the torus. Okay, so but you can change tau, for example, by small amount, and you get a different torus. But if you change it like 1 unit plus 1, you get actually the same torus. Okay, so you can certainly study the response of the system under the change of the torus parameter tau, which actually we did before, but we make use of the large version of such transformation. Okay, so this is the modular transformation in CFT, and it is now, I think it is believed that any CFT derived as a two-dimensional lattice statistical mechanical system, for example, it should be modular invariant, meaning it should be anomaly free. Okay, you change the way you label the torus, but the CFT, it shouldn't apparently should not depend on such a way you parameterize your torus. Okay, so this is like for the very heresy type of theory, theory should be invariant under modular transformation. Okay, chiral CFTs which appear at the edge of the chiral topological phases are not modular invariant. It kind of supporting the point of view that if the theory is anomalous under coordinate transformation or gravitational perturbations, it is saying it should be connected to the bulk topological phase. Okay, because if it is an anomalous theory, it cannot exist on its own. Okay, but now we are having a system where we have both left and right movers, and in usual situations, if we glue left moving part and right moving part properly, I will actually achieve modular invariance. Okay, so that is actually the situation here in the two-dimensional static system. Okay. However, so it seems like for this situation, okay, that the situation we have, it seems like we can achieve modular invariance. However, if we insist on having a symmetry condition, which was necessary to make system gapless, there might be a conflict between the symmetry condition and the desire to achieve modular invariance. There may be conflict. Okay, so my conjecture, which I cannot prove in full generality, is that if modular invariance is not achieved under the condition with these symmetry conditions, it must be a topological phases of matter, edge of the topological phase of matter. Yes?
What do you mean by demanding that the CFT is invariant under some symmetry?
Yes.
The CFT is invariant or it's not?
Yes, so I will enforce CF to be symmetric in the following way, okay? By imposing a symmetry projection, essentially. But let me explain this procedure in terms of this example I'm discussing, which is nothing but just free fermion, and I want to use complex fermions instead of Majorana fermions, which somehow makes notation easier, but it's the same theory. So partition function, we can consider in terms of given boundary conditions, okay? So you have a partition function, let's say for left moving part, but you can put various boundary conditions, both in time and the space. And you can parameterize your partition function alpha beta, okay? So for each fixed boundary conditions, this partition function is not modular invariant, okay? For example, modular S transformation exchanges space and time. So that means it must exchange the spatial boundary condition and time boundary condition, okay? And similarly, modular T transformation, where tau goes to tau plus one, you will pick up extra phase factor, okay? But combining left moving partition function and right moving partition function, which is essentially a complex conjugate of the left moving part, you can almost always achieve modular invariance, okay? You just take this partition function mod square. So then these phases never appear. And if you have both boundary condition in the sum, it satisfies modular S invariance. However, so this is the situation usually happens in the two-dimensional stat mech. But now I start enforcing symmetry conditions. Okay, so this is what I mean by enforcing symmetry. I will enforce this symmetry by considering projections, okay? So if the edge theory is preserving Z2 cross Z2 symmetry, it must stay invariant once we are changing tau, I can enforce my system stay in the sector where it has a definite Z2 cross Z2 quantum number, +1, +1, okay? If Z2 cross Z2 quantum number is strictly conserved, this projection should not do anything, right? You can change tau, and this system just preserves Z2 cross Z2 symmetry. So one sector, let's say quantum number ++, it just stay to be the same, okay? But now by enforcing that, I kind of paying a price, because if I enforce my system to be in the particular sector, so this is a projection operator, and I simply insert this into the partition function, okay? So by doing this, I'm enforcing my system to stay in the particular Z2 cross Z2 sector, okay? Which should be possible if the edge is ordinary 2+2-dimensional stat mech system. However, once I choose to enforce this symmetry, it turns out it may not be possible to realize modular invariance now, okay? So the partition function with this projection operator, it turns out you cannot make it modular invariant, okay?
You're saying because you're missing some of the terms in the previous slide that would save you from, can you go back to the...
Yes, so this is modular invariant, but now we are computing partition function with projection operator.
Right, so you're saying that I should think of this as, but projecting, I'm sort of like taking away some of these terms.
Yeah, exactly.
Save me from...
Yes, you can think this way, okay?
But the original action
before projection, yes.
Well, the original action,
yes,
was already symmetric.
Already symmetric, right. But by inserting projection, you are removing some state, okay? Yes. So going back to this picture, if nothing anomalous happens, okay, you keep your quantum number, let's say ++, -, and you change flux or geometrical flux, which is tau, okay? But even if there's no pumping, quantum number should never change, okay? However, if series are anomalous, quantum number can change. However, if we artificially enforces quantum number to be conserved, then it means the opposite. You cannot achieve the invariance under modular transformation. Okay. So this is the situation where we are not having modular invariance. But quite interestingly, there's the interesting exception. So far, I'm keeping a n copies of a theory. So remember, I started off from this theory. So I have nf copies of edge theory. Okay. However, if nf is actually 8, or if number of complex permutations is 4, something magical happens. In that case, even with projection, okay, partition function is actually modular invariant, okay? So this is a coincidental situation. So if NF is 0 mod 8, you achieve modular invariance. And you can actually see that when N is 8, you can precisely gap out the system by adding fermion interaction to the system. So remember, at the quadratic level, you have a topological phase classified by an integer, which is Balanchine number or number of chiral edge mode. However, this symmetric topological classification breaks down once you start adding interactions. When you have eight n copies, theory is actually not topological with interactions, because you can adiabatically change your system into topological trivial system. Okay. So this you can check microscopically by writing down some particular interaction at the edge theory. So you can gap out the edge theory without breaking any symmetry, which is consistent with the expectation from the fact that when NF is 8, you have a modular invariance, right? Okay, so how much time there at? I forgot what I said.
So you were saying that for n equal to 4 or 8,
yes,
then you could gap out the edge.
You can gap out the edge, and you can continuously deform your bulk system into the topologically trivial state, which is not possible just by adding mass terms, but by adding interactions, you can turn your system into the topologically trivial state.
And this is one of the things that happens when you add interactions.
Yes, you need interactions. Yes.
Right.
Yes.
So that the classification without interactions is modified.
Modified by interactions.
But in this particular sense, that you relate n equal to 4.
That's right.
N equal to 0.
That's right. Okay.
Is this 8 related somehow to the 1D classification of fermions that I have?
Yes. So we got inspired by that. Okay. The technical level, yes. For example, the perturbations you can write down, it is precisely the perturbation we do in the Filikowski-Kita FYE. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I should actually mention that. Thanks. However, symmetry condition is totally different. Here, I'm assuming Z2 cross Z2 symmetry, whereas in their system, they have a different symmetry conditions. But somehow, by coincidence, I can just choose the same interaction to gap out the system. If it is a coincidence or if there's any deep reason, I think it's a good question, but I don't have a definite answer for this moment. Okay. So just to wrap up, by making use the response of the edge theory to the external gravitational field, for 2 plus 1 dimensional chiral topological phases, we derive a new, I don't know how to call it, a thermodynamic formula for the kappa xy. So we can now tabulate for 2-dimensional topological phases. We have a thermal strata formula which relates sigma xy to thermodynamic quantities like a magnetization, a particle number, and so on and so forth. For the topological superconductor, we now have an analogous formula for kappa xy, which is written in the language of LZ and the entropy and the temperature and the omega z. Interestingly, this we can apply to 3-dimensional case. In that case, we generalize topological magnetoelectric effect in topological insulator to topological thermomechanical response in three-dimensional topological superconductor. I don't explain what they are, but I just say it's possible. For the second part of my talk, I am proposing the following strategy for the symmetry protected topological phases. Okay, so if you know, if you read a second volume of Porchinsky, everything I said here is pretty much contained in this in the Porchinsky second volume. It's exactly the same, except I'm making a different interpretation. So more generally, so I just presented one example, but this strategy seems to work for the wider class of system. So here's a take-home message. So symmetry protected topological phases, from the H theory point of view, it is the physics of something called asymmetric orbifold. Okay. So the proposed strategy is the following. So you have an H theory, and you are given to some symmetry group G. Okay. So first we do a projection by symmetry group G. So I start from some original partition function, but I do projection to get the different partition function. And in the path integral language, it actually amounts to imposing a different boundary conditions in time and space directions, twisted by symmetry group G. Okay, so you can, this is the partition functions with boundary conditions prescribed by some group element G1 and G0, time and space, and you take a sum, okay? If you make this sum to be modular invariant, this tells you that your theory is actually not the symmetry protected topological phase, okay? However, if you cannot make this a projected partition function anomaly free, it means this theory, if it can be realized, it must come from the bulk, because otherwise it's anomalous theory, so it cannot make sense, okay? So this is the suggested strategy, and this kind of projection is called, in broad sense, it's orbifold projections, and I put asymmetric because theory is often anomalous under modular transformation if symmetry acts on left moving part and right moving part differently. Okay, so this part I think I have no time to explain, but I just want to mention that similar relation between a symmetry protected topological phases and the topological order in broad sense is also noted by Reving and Gu at the same time, and the a little bit different, but it seems like it's almost the same thing. Okay, I think this is a little bit technical comment, but as I said, this strategy I cannot prove for generality. Okay, unfortunately, but this method is tested for a wider range of system, not just the fermionic system I mentioned, but for example, systems which can be described by K matrices. You can make explicit comparison between the partition function and the potential perturbation to the system. And you can precisely see that precisely when modular invariance can be achieved, you can gap out your system safely, okay? So by case, I can check this conjecture, and it seems like it's working. And I think if it works, it's a better way to test the topological property of your system, because enumerating potential perturbations, usually it may be a very hard problem, right? Because you might miss one perturbation which might be miserable, but okay, you cannot be, I think it, I'm not saying it's impossible, but it may be a hard task in general. But this proposal is just checking your theory with a torus parameter, which you can do without adding any perturbations. Okay, so that might have some technical advantage. And finally, there are many other approaches to symmetric protected topological phases. And I feel sorry if I cannot list all interesting literature, but there's a lot of other approaches, most notably the group cohomology approach, and I am not sure if there's any good connection between other method and my approach. So I'm open to any suggestion. Okay, thank you very much.
Questions?
So if I understood this properly, you're proposing to look for anomalies?
Yes.
Instead of to check for stability?
Yeah, for example, yes. This single possible perturbation. Yes.
Right. But so in practice, how do you do that? How do you look for it? I mean, you describe, you put it on a torus.
Yes.
Right.
Because energy and momentum is always conserved, and symmetric projection is, symmetry operation is usually something already defined. Okay. So this program you can somehow always do. Maybe sometimes it's technically complicated. But for example,
but are you assuming that you have an expression for the partition function from the start? Or what do you have?
Yes, that's something I'm assuming. So I have some expression for the let's say I know everything about the CFT before projection. I'm assuming some knowledge about this. But for example, this thing, perturbation may be quite messy if you start thinking about non-abelian series. For abelian series, it's perhaps cosine of some bosonic field. But for the non-abelian CFTs or many other complicated CFTs, it may be more complicated. I mean, this thing, perturbation may be complicated. But assuming some knowledge on the CFT before projection, this program can be done.
More questions?
Yeah, so is there a connection between this orbital construction and the large gauge transformations that you used?
Ah, yes. So large gauge, is that large gauge or large coordinate transformations?
Well, for the SP2, it would be the large gauge transformation, I guess.
Yes, actually, I was using large coordinate transformations. But large gauge transformation.
On the torus.
Yeah, on the torus. Yeah, yes, exactly. That's what I mean. Yes. So, yes, I'm using large gauge transformations. So, you take a, for example, So let me give you an example. You take a quantum Hall effect with some particular K matrix. So you might have many components, like 100 components maybe. And you take a 100 another component with opposite chiralities, and you make a non-chiral series. Okay. And then you impose some symmetry conditions, and then you ask if the theory stays gapless under this symmetry condition. And then I make use of this large coordinate transformation to see if it is possible or not.
In higher dimensions, you don't have this CFT, so we still have an option of large gauge information.
Oh, yeah, that's right. So I don't know if this is specific to 1 plus 1D or... Yeah, it's a very good question. I don't know much about higher dimensions.
Yeah, but I don't feel this. I don't have a good intuition. Why do you say that whether you can add some, you know, like a derivative potential terms to get out the system is related to the case of whether the theory can be modular invariant by considering a specific n equal to a case. So it seems like it's a very counterintuitive thing in my understanding. So if I have modular invariance, like I have a beta property of a CFT. So it seems like my A state should be robust. I'm just
yes.
My intuition is kind of lacking. How do you connect this to?
So I think there's various things. So once we have anomalous behavior, once we have anomaly, we are kind of assuming it never goes away.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But what does this mean, it never goes away? Well, usually if you have a system, you make it all gapped, and you can perhaps make it completely trivial. In that case, everything just disappears, nothing remains. However, it seems like it's in contradiction with the fact that anomaly must stay. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, it kind of suggests that actually it's perhaps meaning that you should not gap out system, right? That is kind of one thing. Another perhaps more technical way of thinking about it is that there's a state operator mapping in conformal field theory. So on the one hand, at this level of potentials or perturbations, by imposing some symmetry conditions, you are removing these perturbations from your theory. Okay? But in terms of state operator mapping, it actually means you are removing some states from your theory or from your spectrum, which is done by this projection, right? So that's how you connect projection and the perturbations you're adding.
Okay. And the second question, since in the first part you were told you are trying to write on this straight-up formula.
Yes.
I know that the Microstone has some arguments say that with the gravitational anomaly is ready to do some of responses, maybe higher order effect, which need that kind of a torsion.
Yes, that's right. So that's actually perhaps I think yes, so I think in higher dimensions, I think this problem is more pronounced. And in three dimensions, I think he actually mentioned in three dimensions to see gravitational anomaly. I think what he was, one of the things he is saying that he has to make a domain more explicitly to see the Carroll and Hmel problem. Okay. So in 2+1 dimensions, as far as I understand, there's no such problem. So straight up formula is, I think it's okay. But in higher dimensions, for example, if you take a surface of three-dimensional topological superconductor and you want to drive the summer current through it, right? Question is, how do I do it? And that's more subtle because when we are defining topological response of 3D TI or 3D-dimensional topological superconductor, usually we gap out the surface weakly by adding heat breaking perturbations around the system. But then your surface state is not gapless anymore, right? So in that case, can I still flow, make the thermal current flow? I think that is the question. But in two dimensions, It's precisely it gapless, so there's no problem. But I agree that in higher dimension it has some problem, yes, some issue.
It's okay.
No. That's fine, she's
saying. Okay, thank you.